Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Game of Loans podcast in association with Grand Union Finance. I am your host, Sam, and today I'm joined by the co-host of the Baker Street Property Meet, Andrew Roberts. For anyone that knows Andrew, been to the Baker Street Property Meet or has followed him online at all, you'll know this guy loves to geek out about stats. So do I. It's a bit of a geek fest, this one. So if you're into that sort of stuff, you're going to love it. If not, maybe listen to a different episode. I don't know. But you know, I really enjoyed recording this episode with Andrew. I've known Andrew for a long, long, long time. He's a very formidable property investor. Very much understands the market and you know what's going on. Makes really good predictions and stuff like that. So we talk a lot about that sort of stuff. Don't forget to get along to the next Baker Street Property Meet and see Andrew live if you're around in London. It is usually, I believe, the last Wednesday of every single month. But make sure you check on the website in the show notes below to check out the date and book your tickets. And of course, as always, this podcast is in association with Grand Union Finance. So if you need any help with raising any mortgages, bridging finance, development finance, or commercial finance, you can also find a link down in the show notes to book a call with one of our fantastic brokers who will help you out. Anyway, let's get on with the podcast. Hope you enjoy it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Game of Loans podcast, where I'm joined, and I'm very, very excited, I should say, to be joined by Andrew Roberts, because Andrew not only is obviously a property investor in his own right, but is one of the co-hosts of the Baker Street Property Meet, which I go to very, very regularly. And I've got to say, one of my favourite things of the month is listening to Andrew's sort of market updates, because we like to geek out about economics. So, Andrew, I'm really happy that you come on the podcast. I'm looking forward to geeking out a little bit. Welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much, Sam, for inviting me as well. I mean, it's always a pleasure to see you at the Baker Street. You're always swamped with guests. It's a great place for networking with over 350 people every month. But yeah, economics, marketplace, isn't it a great time? I mean, I hear so many people come up to me and go, oh, I'm thinking of doing this strategy. Might have worked when interest rates were low or when the regulation was different, but it don't work now. So, you know, to me, I try and keep people very current, very up to date, very on theme. I run a planning consultancy of my own, which is a great way of actually keeping at the bleeding edge of what's happening in planning as well. So where do you want to go with this, Sam? I can talk to you about everything from strategies, economics, planning.
Well, shall we start with the wide, and we'll get smaller. So the wide is the UK economy right now. Now, as I said before, the main thing that I look forward to about going to Baker Street is the sort of economic. It started out as like a general just property market update, but it really has started to become more of an economics kind of update. I mean, they should definitely get you to do like some kind of weekly news thing on BBC or something for the economics. The amount of research to go into it is amazing. And I also love, as someone that's done a couple of history degrees, I love the fact that you always put your sources at the bottom of the slides. That gets me excited. I'm like, oh, this is proper research. He's looked into this. So let's talk about the economy. Now, broad strokes, it's been a bit of a shit show last couple of years. It was always going to be off the back of something like the pandemic. But in every adversity, there is opportunity. And certainly we've seen the market go a bit up and down. No one's really certain what's going to be happening with property prices, what's going to be happening with the Bank of England base rate, what's going to be happening with recession. Are we in it? Are we out of it? I feel like it's like the hokey-cokey, the recession at the moment. We're in, out. We're going to shake it all about in a minute, and we'll see what happens at the end. But what's your sort of broad strokes view on where we are in the economy at the moment? I think that's a good place to start, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think let's go back rather than where we are at the moment. Let's put this into perspective where we are at the moment. Where we are is we've just entered the UK's normal market space of interest rates and inflation over the last 200 to 300 years. So we're now in our normal phase. We've been in abnormal with interest rates at 0.1%. So it distorted markets very significantly because capital was effectively free.
Yeah.
And you could pretty much do anything you wanted. And it worked because there was no cost of capital, realistically. I got into property and interest rates were 15.9%. Now, people are moaning at 5.25% bank base rate. And I'm like, in the real world.
Yeah. I mean, look, just to interject on that, I think it is important that to understand that I think with the market, the way that it is right now and the property in general, the property market probably couldn't suffer anything beyond maybe 10% as an interest rate, maybe even lower than that right now. So times were a little bit different, but it's really important to give that context to the fact that actually what it is now is actually, when you think of the longer term, it's quite normal, really, isn't it?
Well, it's actually exceptionally cheap when we look at it. And you will resonate with what I shared last month, where if we went back to when the bank base rate was 5.25% and we looked at the house prices back then, and then we adjusted that house price for inflation over the years, and we look at where the house price is now, house prices are actually cheaper when adjusted for inflation than they were back then. Not the real terms, pounds, dollars out your pocket, but the inflation adjusted house prices. So interest rates are the same. House prices are cheaper, but rents are significantly up. So margins are wider. Yes, taxation is up. Yes, legislation and compliance is up. But there is more margin for investors. A lot of people will complain, oh, you know, my deal's not stacking, I'm negatively geared because I'm paying too much in interest. But what you've got to remember here is they have overpaid for their property because they thought money was free, grew on trees, and that was the price it should have been all the time. They should have been working on, say, between a 6 and an 8% real interest rate to stress test their business. Do I still stand up? Do I still make profits at this level? And that is the problem. People have been lulled into a sense of 15 years of 0.25, 0.1%, 0.25% interest rate, and that's normal. It's not normal. It's an anomaly in 300 years.
Yeah. And do you know what? I did very much enjoy that particular slide at the last Baker Street because it's something I discuss with my clients a lot, and it is that the how much you're paying is irrelevant as long as you're hitting the margin you want to hit.
Yeah.
And that often gets a few eyebrows raised because they're like, well, hang on a second, Sam, as a broker, shouldn't your job be to get me the cheapest mortgage possible, the cheapest bridging loan possible? And to a certain degree, yes, but actually I see it as a much bigger thing than that, is that if we can truly understand the goals that a client or an investor is trying to achieve, then we can work long-term with them to try to achieve them. And one of the clear differentials between, I think at the moment in what I'm seeing, an investor that I'm like, they are going to go far. They are going to absolutely crush this versus an investor that I think will stumble and fall more times than they don't, is this understanding of margin. And it is... Yeah. It's the irrelevance of certain figures and the real relevance of others. And a great story for this is, and this was actually before COVID, so it's obviously a slightly different time, but I had a client and he was a first-time buyer, first-time landlord, wanted to purchase a HMO as his first property. Now, back then, there wasn't a lot of options for a first-time buyer, first-time landlord that wanted to buy an HMO as their first property. Ready-made HMO as well, I should add. Yeah. So we looked at a really similar property on the street that would just be rented out as a buy-to-let, and we did a comparison between the two. The difference in the interest rate was something like 2.5%, 3% difference in interest rate, which would have meant that he would be paying for the same amount, probably something like £500 or £600 more per month for this particular mortgage. But he was making, in terms of the income that the HMO was generating, something like an additional 1,000. So the difference was an extra 400. Plus, he also had the nous to realize that he wasn't going to get stuck on this rate forever, because as he improved his experience, he was going to get more lending options. And that for me was a great conversation. One obviously sticks in my head. This is about 4 years ago now. And I use it as an example of this all the time, that actually it's not how much you're paying for the funds. It's how much you can make with the funds that you're taking. Yeah. So if you can borrow X over here for 2% and you can use X over there to create, I don't know, 5%, and you get, so then you've got your 3% net up. The answer to the question, how much money would you like to borrow, is how much can you give me? Because you know that you can create income, you can create funds, you can create income, you can create margin. And if you can learn how to do that, I think for me, and maybe I've got a rather limited view because it's very much on the focus on the finance side, that's the key to this. That's the key to being a successful investor. It's understanding margin. And that's why when that slide went up, I mean, you were busy. You were talking to not just me, you were talking to 350 other people. I had a massive smile on my face. I was like, I actually took a picture of it because I wanted to share it. I don't think if I ever.
It was a very well shared slide across social media. I mean, hit me up on Property with Andrew and you'll find that slide on my Property with Andrew social media. But it covered the rents, the interest rates, the real property prices, the inflation adjusted property prices, and the trend line, and a window of 50 years of data for all of those metrics.
Yeah, I do watch this presentation sometimes and think, how do you manage to do this whilst also, you know, having a day job, so to speak, because it must be a full-time task doing all that research.
I have a team of staff who work for me, so I don't do it all myself, and I thank Neil very much because he makes a massive contribution to this. I have the ideas and the vision of how I want to present it. We work as a team to data mine, and then Neil will put the data together. That was actually, I think, five different slides where I've got five different data sources and I've mapped and layered one on top of the other. So we'd had to sort of go in Photoshop, layer it, and then I work out what the story is in order to present it in an engaging way.
Yeah, it's good. I love it. You mentioned...
There is hundreds of hours goes into it.
I can imagine, and it shows. It does show. You mentioned something in there as well, which I think it's important for us to also touch upon, which is rents and the private rental sector. My personal opinion is that the private rental sector has been hammered too much in recent years, in recent decades, you might even say. And I think that has had a contributory factor on the fact that rents are so high right now. I'd love to get your thoughts though on it. I see rental increases as a great opportunity for property investors because it comes back to that M word, margin. But from economic point of view, why are rents so high, and is it good for the economy that rents are high, or is it bad for the economy that rents are high? I'd love to get your viewpoint on that.
Well, are rents high? Let me pull on some different bits of data. And again, if you follow the social media, you'll see the sources of this and where I've compiled and overlaid one set with another set to compare and contrast. But very simply speaking, rents haven't really risen in the last 15 years significantly. And then we've had a 5,150% increase in interest rates. Yet rents have gone up 10%. And people are now going, oh, it's awfully expensive. We've lived in an environment that has been a false environment for investors who've borrowed cheap money, but also for tenants. Because had interest rates been going up, had inflation been a lot harder, rents would have risen as well. And what we're seeing is there is a lag between the interest rate rise and then the rent rises. What I've also done is looked at this from an economic supply and demand perspective here. And what we've got is an exodus of landlords. They're leaving the marketplace in a couple of different ways. For unsophisticated landlords, a couple got together, they kept one house, they just rented it out. With the tax changes, it's not been economic to actually retain that house because they're tending to be negatively geared because often they have a mortgage on it. But also from the point of view of the legislation, that's been killing them as well. So their margins have contracted. So a lot of those people have exited the marketplace. We've also got portfolio landlords who've been going, I'm not getting as much on these single lets. And there's this new kid on the block called serviced accommodation, short lets, holiday lets, whatever you want to term it, that is the trendy name for this week. We'll jump over the fence to there. And what we've just seen is government eventually, I mean, I predicted this probably 3 years ago, jump in and say, we need to regulate this marketplace. So we're creating a national register. You're going to have to be licensed if you're running serviced accommodation, short-term holiday lets. We're going to ensure that you've got a planning use class. So you're going to have to get planning permission to move to a new use class. We're going to make it easy for holiday lets to move back into residential accommodation. And what we want is councils to control the housing stock in their area. So I foresee a proliferation of Article 4s popping up here, there and everywhere, like there are for HMOs, to restrict serviced accommodation happening in certain areas. With the regulation coming in, the register, and we can expect the similar sort of, if not higher standards than HMOs, that is going to contract that marketplace significantly. You're going to find the people who've jumped in it, who are bottom feeding and providing a poor quality product, having to get out of it. We've also got 90-day limits on certain things. So all of these different factors are going to make that marketplace less attractive to be in. And a lot of operators in that marketplace are operating under what we call a rent-to-rent model. You know, I'm corporate letting off him and I'm retail letting to the public. Well, again, that marketplace is being cut off by the fact that the principal landlord, the head landlord, the building owner, effectively is now on the hook for this transaction. So it's making it more difficult as a sector to continue to operate in for certain methods of doing this. If you're a professional at it, like a professional buy-to-let landlord, HMO landlord or developer, you will still thrive because you've got a professional business. People who are jumping in it as a get-rich-quick are going to struggle because it's a more regulated marketplace.
Absolutely.
That's my simple answer. So what we're seeing is numbers of landlords and numbers of properties in the single-let marketplace reducing. But we're also seeing, through households breaking up, through the movement of people, which is still inward to the UK, the demand growing, and Savills recent report this month, that we're recording this video, actually said we have a shortfall of 1 million rental homes by the year 2031. We have a shortfall now, but that shortfall is predicted to continue to grow. Therefore, supply and demand is increasing, supply is reducing, rents are going to keep rising.
There's a couple of things, and I was writing some notes down as you were saying to remind myself. So the first thing I just want to bring up is the word opportunity. And you kind of touched upon it insofar as if you do things right, there's a huge opportunity here. You mentioned about service accommodation, but I think the same goes for the standard buy-to-let stuff. I've been having a lot of conversations with my other half recently. She is the typical person that the government are trying to get rid of, which is that she just owns one buy-to-let, which she just happened to used to live in years ago, kept it, etc., and is now it's personally owned, and she's having the usual difficulties. And I've kind of explained to her what changes can be made, and effectively what the government back in the day when they made, you know, when Osborne come in and made all these sort of changes, the idea was to professionalize the industry. So if you do what they want you to do, there's still opportunity here to get it done. Absolutely. And all it does for me, and I had this back and forth on Instagram recently with somebody who was getting a bit irate. He very much appeared to be that he might have been one of those rent to SA providers that you mentioned, and maybe that's why he was a bit annoyed, which I'll come on to as a separate point in a sec. But the
listen,
big one
I can rub people up the wrong way because I'm very strongly opinionated on certain things.
But as long as you back it up with facts, I think that's the thing. And what I said to him was, I said, look, there's two points to raise here, which is number one, there's whenever the barrier to entry is high, it creates an incredible opportunity for those that are willing to put the effort in. A great example is things like nurseries and care homes and businesses like that are incredibly profitable businesses, but they have a huge barrier to entry. The nurseries, you need the Ofsted, the care homes, you need the CQC. CQT. I would say QVC, like the old shopping channel. What am I doing? So these are barriers to entry that stop just anyone being able to do it. And the rent to SA has had an incredibly low barrier to entry, which means a lot of people are doing it. A lot of people are doing it badly. I will caveat that I know of a lot of people that do it exceptionally well. And I feel for those people. And I'm interested to find out how they're going to kind of change things up. So the opportunity is there, and it's same with buy to let. If you do it right, if you buy, you know, if you have a limited company that owns everything, and you know, you get the tax breaks and all this kind of stuff, there is still a huge opportunity because there's going to be stock available. Rents are going through the roof. You know, you can take advantage of that. But you know, for those of the people that are out there that have got all their eggs in one basket, maybe they are rent to SA providers. This is a great lesson in making sure that you are, you know, diversified, because it just goes to show that one potential change in legislation can ruin your entire business. So you need to have a backup. You need to be able to, you know, imagine there are people out there that have hundreds of units that they're managing, and suddenly overnight at some point in the very near future, they're all going to be completely redundant. So what the bloody hell do they do then? And it all comes down to being able to understand various, you know, different strategies. And off air, we were talking, weren't we, about why it's so important to understand what strategy works right now rather than what did work years ago. You know, the term BRR was the buzzword for a decade in property. Yeah. Buy something, renovate it, refinance it, pull all your money back out, money in, money out, whatever you want to call them, these deals. The markets change and they don't work as well as they used to, but they're still being peddled by, the usual suspects in terms of getting courses and whatnot. And I think what it does is, I think it does sort the wheat from the chaff. The ones that realize this are the ones that were going to be more successful. The ones that are just happy to listen to whoever wants to tell them what they want to hear, they will continue doing it and potentially won't make the profits and be as successful as they want to be. But there is, in every market, there are certain strategies that are going to work better than others. And I think it's just being agile to that, right?
Absolutely. I think the key thing that you've hit on there is markets change. And a learning I had probably 10-ish years ago was I sat and listened to an inspirational speaker speaking to talented young individuals. And his speech was basically, guys, you are going to leave school and your job probably hasn't even been invented because your industry doesn't exist. If I said you were going to be a social media analyst 20 years ago, you'd go, what social media? And, you know, if I said to you, Sam, hey, what's your MySpace? I'll hit you up on it. You go, what? My what? Because things come and things go. So you have to adapt as industries change. And this is critical. I mean, at the moment, the government are creating huge opportunities. There are a lot of guest houses and hotels which are vacant post-COVID, not doing very well, struggling on the knees. You only have to go to some of the commercial portals to see them up for sale. Well, they've introduced a permitted development right to convert it to residential. The first permitted development right ever to be implemented on a building that you can already sleep in that's commercial to convert it to residential. So it's an easy convert. There's light in those rooms. There's beds. There's running water. There's everything pretty much there ready to go. The only thing you need to do is make them the size that you need to for a C3 accommodation, 37 square meters minimum with a shower. So that's an example of the government creating an opportunity that doesn't exist. If you're first in the market, you can clean up. Again, you know, we could look at the expansion of the permitted development right, class MA, to convert the whole of a commercial building. Now, I was mentoring a client of mine who'd bought a 35,000 square foot building, but he couldn't convert the whole building under class MA. So he converted the maximum. And on the 5th of March, we submit the application in for the rest of that building because we now can. So it's understanding and adapting as rules change, because we were preparing a full planning application for the residual. But the reason I don't want to do it under full planning is they want about 20 grand's worth of expert reports that you don't need for PD. Plus we have to pay a Section 106 charge, which is prohibitive because that local authority has a 40% contribution for social housing. So 4 in every 10 flats have to be given to social housing. It doesn't make economic sense. Therefore, yeah, we've got an opportunity. And there is a significant number of these opportunities out there which are new and available. And like we've said, certain strategies, because of changes in legislation on rent to rent, that is now going to make that incredibly difficult for people to do without the building owner signing up to the same terms of contract, and they've got little control over it. So it's going to cause structural changes in markets, and you have to adapt and shift.
Absolutely. And I think that's why it's so vital. I talk to people about various different types of events that I will go to, and I always say, look, there is the traditional networking event. You're all in a room, you're having a chat, you're having a coffee. That's great, and you're talking to one person or a couple of people at a time. You're learning a little bit about what they're doing. You're not really getting a true insight, but they're the places where you might meet a potential business partner and stuff like that. You've got to couple those up with a more educational themed event. And what always makes me laugh is you get so many networking events that advertise no speakers. Well, actually, so what am I paying you for? What am I paying? What, you just want me to pay for you to hire a room for me to stand in? No. I want to go and I want to learn something. And look, I've been doing what I do for 17 years. You've been doing it just slightly less than that, you know, by the looks of things. It's every day's a school day. You've got to, whether you are, and this comes back to that whole, this theme, I think, of this episode, which is, you know, to be agile, to be keeping your finger on the pulse, making sure that you are continually educating yourself, signing up to, you know, YouTube channels that are going to keep you updated with what's going on in the property world, what strategy is going to work, listening to podcasts like this, where you're here, it might just be a little tidbit. It might just be one thing. Oh yeah. That, like the get you said about the guest houses, somebody might listen to this and go, that's a good idea. Use that and go and explore it more, research it, understand it. But you're not going to even get that if you're sticking your head in the ground and thinking that what you're doing now, what you have been doing for the last 10 years is still going to work now. Things are going to change, and you have to always know, you know, what, look, I believe that done right, buy to let will always work in some capacity. It's always got a place. And for me personally, in terms of my, you know, my future strategy, and I'm always sharing this, is that having a nice portfolio of simple buy to lets at some point in the future, probably taking in my strategy, some multi-unit freehold blocks, to be honest, because I think you get a bit of yield out of those. But just having something that's simple, relatively passive, someone else can look after them, is a really good thing to have in your portfolio. And I mean larger portfolio, not just property, but everything in general. That's good to have. Yield will be lower, but it can be relatively passive, and you get the added benefit, hopefully, of some capital appreciation over time as well. It's good to have that stuff. But you said a little bit off air, didn't you, that the you've got to look at where what's right for you, what you're trying to achieve, what the long term is, and work backwards from there to say, right, what's going to help me now? What strategy I go for now in property might not be my end goal strategy, might not be what I want to end up doing, but it's going to help me get there. And I think that's a big, big key that people miss out on when they do, particularly go on these kind of courses where they're sort of pushed in a linear fashion from do buy to let first, then get into HMO, then maybe try SA, then eventually you progress all the way up to commercial. It doesn't work like that. And as we said, it's just a way of selling courses, isn't it? But
as I said to you off air, what we've got to do, and you will see a lot of people turn up on a course, some will absolutely smash it and some will fail. And observationally, what a lot of people miss, and those that fail particularly miss, is, you know, people talk about a why. Let's park that for one side. They've got to have a passion. They've got to feel it in their heart. They have got to have passion about what they're doing. Now, if you haven't got passion for what you're doing, you're not going to get up every morning and do that, because it's going to be like walking through treacle. No matter what your why is, you're still going to find it's walking through treacle. So if you don't like hustling to get rent-to-rent deals, or you don't like arguments over cheese in the fridge that's been stolen on a HMO, then find a business or property strategy that meets your personal passion. And, you know, to me, I love taking large commercial buildings and converting them into residential spaces, which are single let, and I don't have to get involved. You know, fortunately, I have contracts with councils and they take them from us. So it eases my burden of work, that I can create a product doing something I love doing, and then I hands off it to a third party and I monitor the statistics and the performance and the data coming off it.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things you touched on there. That was, you mentioned the word, you know, finding your why, and I get it. I know it's a phrase that helps focus the mind on the reasons you're doing something, but I think that can be broken down, I think, firstly into two separate things. Number one, you've absolutely put the, you know, hit the nail on the head, which is you're gonna be doing it day to day, so you've got to love it. You know, it's not just about the end goal; it's the journey to get there. It's got to be something that you are going to end up being passionate about. But the second half of that is that if you're not passionate about property, it's okay, by the way, to not be passionate about property, but also understand what a great investment it is. Then get involved in the things that don't necessarily need you to love property, and that's absolutely fine. And a really good example of this is that I worked with a client not so long ago, and this is the thing that mortgage brokers hear all the time. We say to them, right, you know, what's your end goal, Mrs. Client? First property that they're buying, first BRR, you know, so they get very excited. They're learning all about bridging and they're getting very unexcited again. But I would say to them, you know, what's the long-term strategy? And the amount of people that say, I want to earn 10 grand a month net off my portfolio, the magic 10K, everyone can have the best life possible with 10K a month. I mean, you can have a pretty good life with 10K a month.
They've just never reached inflation.
Well, yeah, exactly. But also, like I always say to them, yeah, but why? Why do you need 10K? Actually break it down, because chances are either A, you're going to be really, really pleasantly surprised that the life that you want you can afford with a lot less, happy days, Absolutely. Or you might be a bit shocked that 10K is not going to get you what you need. So ultimately you're going to reach that goal and then be disappointed. But this particular story was a good one, because I always like there to be a reason behind it. And they said, well, actually, okay, Sam, you know, we rounded to 10K, but it's 9,000, blah, blah, blah. We've done it to the nearest, like, sort of 50 pound we've worked out. We've got a passion for this particular children's charity. We want to build our own. We've worked out that for us to be able to work in it full time and run this charity in the way that we want, we're going to the passive income in the background is going to have to reach this. And I love the fact, and they've gone into so much detail about what equipment they would need, what the cost of acquiring certain requirements from the government in terms of, you know, those Ofsted things and all this kind of stuff. They looked into what the accommodation for these kids would look like, how much they personally need to survive so they didn't have to have a job in the background. That, for me, that's a proper why. And the one why that gets banned about all the time, and this is going to be controversial, so I'm sorry if I'm upsetting anyone that's listening to this.
I know what's coming.
the why is, oh, I'm doing it for my family. Bullshit. Bullshit.
Agreed.
You're not doing it for your family. You're doing it for you, and own it, right? Now, I love my family, and actually one of my whys, to a degree, is that my mum and dad have looked after me incredibly well throughout my entire life. They've given me loads of great advice. When I've had shit times, they've been there. And I want to make sure that in their retirement, they live the best life they possibly can. Now, someone might say, oh, that's very selfless of you, Sam. So your family is your why. No, I don't want to be in a position where suddenly my mum and dad need full-time care and I'm having to be a full-time carer and, you know, they're not getting the best care then for themselves. That's going to impact on my life. So there is a very, very selfish element to that. Obviously I do want them to have the best quality of life. I'm not trying to say that I don't, but it's this whole thing of, you know, I'm doing it for my family. I'm doing it for future generations and this. Yeah. Do you know what? That's all well and good. But honestly, when the chips are down, that is not going to be enough for you to pick them back up again. It really, really won't. You need to have that selfish reason as to why you're doing that. Because as I said, otherwise you will get to a point where the family just isn't enough. And no matter how much of a wonderful human being you are, that point will come. And then you don't have that motivation to drive through that issue that you're dealing with. So I know that's a bit controversial, mate.
But... No, I'm with you, mate. And I'm doing it for my children. And one of the things I often challenge people with is, okay, so you're doing it for your children. That's great. Let's wind the clock forwards. You're now 75. Next year, you're getting carted off in your wooden box. Your kids are 55. They're at a point where their kids are pretty much left home. They're financially self-sufficient. They don't need your money then. If you're going to do things, do it in the here and now, not in the wishy-washy future that never occurs and you never see and you never get to enjoy. Do it in the here and now.
Exactly. And I think that I think it's just the misinterpretation of what it means when the why is family. Actually, what it is my why is my family. Actually, what I want is because I want to spend more time with my family because I enjoy spending time with them and I don't want to have to work. Or I don't want to be tied to a 9-to-5 job. I want to be able to take my kids to Florida every single year for 4 weeks and not worry about it in the summer. And I want to have, and I want to do it in the summer holidays, so I don't take them out of school and I've got to pay 5 times the amount they would normally cost. And I want to be able to do that because I want to do it. It's got nothing to do with legacy planning a lot of the time, because let's be honest, a lot of the time, I mean, how many times when you talk about legacy planning does somebody become a self-made millionaire or self-made success, and then the next generation bugger the entire thing up because they grow up in a time where everything is provided to them.
It's a different culture. Exactly. With each generation, there's different cultures, but it's a weird sort of world. And I sort of look at what you've said with regards to the sort of spending the time with the family and the legacy and everything. And I sort of go, you've got to give people the here and now, not a memory when you've gone. And it's got to be focused. And so many people, you know, say, oh, I'm going to pass this portfolio on to my kids. Are you enjoying running that portfolio? No. Oh, flipping hate the tenants, hate the admin, hate this. So what you're actually doing is passing a headache to the next generation because you can't be bothered to deal with the headache now. And they're like...
That's such a good way of putting it, actually. I haven't even thought about it like that.
Yeah. I will push people's buttons and I'll make you properly think when I coach you as to really what is it that's behind those statements.
But it's so true, isn't it? And it comes back to what we were saying before about enjoying the journey. You know, I've got some pretty big ambitions in my life that and this is going to sound really counterproductive to say this, is I'm not worried whether I hit them or not. Those goals are there for something to aim for. But actually, what I'm realizing, and what I have personally realized, and I use myself as an example of this all the time, is I started my business nearly 4 years ago because I wanted to use it as a cash flowing machine to buy property with. What I realized was I bloody love running this business. I get very, very excited about systems, processes, back office stuff, creating marketing material, all this operations. I get really excited about it. I'm also
excited about the networking as well. I've seen you.
I know. Not always. I haven't had a lot this year. I've been very, very good. But that I now know, and I've said this. I'm going on a holiday next week for the first time in a long time, and I've said to my missus, she's like, "Oh, it'll be really good for you to switch off." And I said, "But I don't want to. Switching off for me is negative. I'll come back more anxiety ridden into an environment that I've been completely switched off to. I've got everything I need to run my business from abroad is on my phone, and I've set my business up to be like that. So the business can run and I can chime in. I can give advice. I can help people out. I can make sure everyone's okay. New inquiries that come in, I can make sure that a broker is on the phone to them very, very quickly. I can do all of that from a sun lounger. I can do all of that. And I've said to her, I want to do this. And it's taken a bit of time. It's taken a few months to sort of slowly but surely make her realize this. And now she's seeing a slightly different thing because she works 9 to 5 and she also works for the NHS, which means that her day to day is very, very, frustrating a lot of the time. She doesn't see that when I get frustrated, when I get annoyed by something, it's not in the same way that she gets annoyed by something to do with work. I get annoyed because I've got a drive to make things better, and I get very passionate about it. And I think that's what, if anyone can take something away from this, obviously apart from all the great data that we've discussed previously, but if anyone can take something away from this podcast, I'm hoping that it will be to truly actually find the passion that you want to do on a day-to-day basis, because there's that old adage, isn't there? If you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. And there are always going to be times when it's hard. But I wake up every single morning thinking, bloody hell, aren't I lucky that I do this? I don't know if you feel the same, but it's great, isn't it?
Absolutely. But my advice to you, Sam, and this is, words of wisdom from an old man here. You've got to fire yourself from your business.
Oh, I know that. Yeah.
Some of the things you're saying there, you shouldn't be involved in. I learned, but it took me over 10-15 years running my business before I actually realized I was the handbrake on the business. I was actually the bottleneck, slowing the business, slowing its growth down. And I needed to put trust in the people, the systems I'd built, and let that happen. And then look into the business from a helicopter point of view, and then strategically guide it. So, my challenge to you, Sam, the next time we record a podcast is I want to know what progress you're making.
Well, I hate to burst your bubble, but that is actually my plan. and I am making progress towards it. It's not that, and again, we're using me as the example here, but I'm hoping people will see the same things in their own businesses. And I truly believe that property, by the way, is a business. Anyone that's listening to this, you're not a property investor, you're a property business owner. And you're right. It's about finding what you're best at and where you can give the most value. Now, using my company as an example, and I say this to everyone all the time within the business, am I the best man-to-man broker in the country? Probably not. I'm a really good communicator, and I can take what is quite complicated and I can make it accessible to people. That is a real strength of mine. But I don't need to be every single client in Grand Union Finance broker for them to get the benefit of that. Being a bit of a gatekeeper, doing sort of customer service and that kind of stuff in the short term is a much better use of my time. I'm also a very, very, very good sort of strategic planner from a business point of view that I've realized. I can come up with systems and processes very quickly, and it seems to just really resonate and work in my head. So I know that I'm of great benefit to the company if I can spend most of my time doing that. So anyone listening to this, whatever company you're involved in, whether it's property, whether it's another business, whether it's a combination of the two, we use service accommodation as an example earlier on. That for me is a great example of a property-based business system. The two need to work very, very closely together. And I can't remember who it was. They did an HMO talk about this time last year at Baker Street. And they were talking about they actually brought
Sven Meng.
That's it. Yeah. On the screen, she basically shared her organizational chart of her business. And half of them were VAs in the Philippines and some of them were here. And you know, you look at that, and that was for an HMO business, not something that you would typically consider to be a big organizational type company with lots of people in it. But she'd created that and it was working really well because she had realized her talent was for identifying property opportunities and negotiating on them. Everything else, someone else could do.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that presentation thinking, oh, this is really awesome. This is pushing my buttons. I was loving it. System, process, organization, operations. I was like this. I was sitting next to Craig Sullivan, and I think he was thinking, "What's wrong with this guy? He's sweating."
Yeah, we do see a few people geeking off like that, and it's really good because some people are very passionate about that, and it's really good because you have to run a business very tight. It does not take more than a few weeks for a business to fall off the rails and fail. So it is a challenge. It's a treadmill you have to keep running. But I would rather be in charge of my own destiny than have somebody else in charge of my destiny.
Absolutely. What a great quote to finish on. That is that's beautiful. I think everyone take heed of that. That's very, very, very important. But Andrew, look, we said beforehand, didn't we? We could probably do like a 4-hour podcast for the stuff we want to talk about, and we've only touched on probably half the topics I'd like to, and only in a very, very shallow depth compared to.
I was going to say it was shallow.
It was very, very shallow. A little bit like the current recession. To make it a bit topical. But Andrew, it'd be awesome to do another one of these. Maybe later on in the year, once the Bank of England have done a bit of a shake up, and we can talk about how some of those changes are going to impact the market. But for the time being, if people want to reach out to you, maybe you mentioned about the fact that you do mentor, you do coach, and things like that. Yeah. If people would like to find out a little bit more about that, what's the best way of them reaching out? Yeah. Obviously, make sure these links.
They can follow me at Property with Andrew on any social media channel, propertywithandrew.co.uk website, or come down to the Baker Street Property Meet once a month, where I'll give you a market update, which is current and relevant, sharing the opportunities in that marketplace. I believe it's popular because we get 300 plus people every single month. I believe we're also the number one networking event in the UK. We've got a bar in the room, 300 people to network with, and I'm very frequently connecting different people to different people to help. Yeah, and if you've got a commercial deal out there, I'll also buy that off you.
There we go. I knew you'd get that one in. Well, look, I will put all of those links in the show notes. There's no excuse for anyone not to be going and following Andrew, and definitely come down to the Baker Street. I'm coming as often as I can, being up in Birmingham. It's not always as easy to get down to London, but certainly every couple of months I'm down there. So if you are planning on going as well, guys, do reach out to me and let me know, because if I'm going, it'd be great to chat with you guys as well, and reach out to Andrew and let him know so that he can come and find you during the breaks and network with you as well. But Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. I know you're a busy guy. Really appreciate your time and sharing your knowledge, and look forward to seeing you at the next Baker Street.
Definitely look forward to seeing you, and thank you very much for the invite. It's very kind of you, and I hope the audience have got some value, and I'm open to a further more in-depth on some of the topics. So if the people leave comments below what they'd like the next topic on, I'll come back and do that for you.
Absolutely, yeah. Let me and Andrew know what topics you'd like to delve a little deeper into, and we can always organize some follow-up. So maybe we'll even do some live streams or something in the future as well, so people can ask questions live. We'll look into that. Maybe I've just put Andrew on the spot there.
I field questions from an audience of 300 live every month.
absolutely. But thanks, Andrew, appreciate you coming on.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Sam.
Yep, that's it. Thank you so much for sticking around to the end of the episode, guys. If you have enjoyed this episode or any of the other Game of Loans podcast episodes, please, I would ask you a massive favor to leave a 5-star review. It massively helps me grow the podcast and reach more people that will hopefully enjoy the episodes as much as you have. Thank you so much in advance for this, and I'll hopefully see you on the next episode.